I'm Dr. Mitch Ryan. I'm a medical doctor from America. And just to introduce my team here, Joy from Sustain is the national administrator for Sustain. And we work through them with Mon Parker. I saw her come in and then she, there she is, Mon. Hello, Mon. She's back there talking, which is not unusual. And then my wife, Carol, she's the donor development director. And next to her, Lek, who is our Jungle Hospital finance and HR person. So that's our team that is here today. Let's see. Okay. There we go. Our team works with Earth Mission. I give this talk to Americans, so I need to point out to them where Asia is. So, and apologies to Americans here, but we're right in the middle of that. So on the right-hand side is Thailand, and on the left-hand side is Myanmar or Burma, same country. And there's a hour's worth of discussion on why they're called two different names. But anyways, we are located here. On the top right-hand side is Chiang Mai. This is where our home base is, our office. We do all of our logistics and supplies out of there. We have a branch office in the middle, blue dot. That is where we can bring people out to do training, or we also is our launch point for going inside. The middle is the river. The left is our jungle hospital. And then the little fire marks are frontline experiences that we've had. Our programs are, one of our main programs is a physician associate training program. I understand Australia has a nurse practitioner program, so it's similar to that. It's a mid-level provider, 80% a doctor, can treat, diagnose and treat most common problems in the area. We take some of the best of them and are training them now in common surgical procedures, so appendectomies, C-sections, things like that. In the context of the jungle environment, there just is no doctors around. There's no one to do these necessary life-saving surgeries, so we're training them to do it. In the war context of the war going on, they're often on the front line doing amputations, chest tubes, doing blood transfusions, doing resuscitations. We also have a training program in internal medicine. Engineering tech training, this might be a little bit surprising on why, but I'll hopefully explain a little bit why. This is a 3-year program. We just started in the last 2 weeks this agricultural training, nutrition being an important part of health. Preschool ends up, any teachers out there? No? All right. Anyways, the preschool is a lot more important than you think. To get professionals to stay in a remote environment, healthcare professionals especially, it's very difficult. You can give them good salaries, you can work on getting them professional development, but if you don't have education for their kids, they're not going to stay. So just teachers, critical point there. Give you an example, the overall scope, just we have 60 PA students, about 30 graduates now, one ran away. So they owe us about 5 years after they graduate. So 16 engineering students and 6 graduates. We need more of them. We see roughly 8,000 to 9,000 patients per year in the clinic, 1,500 in the hospital, and are doing about 560 surgeries, although that's increasing every year. We work with the Karen people group. This is a people group spread between Thailand and Burma. On the Thai side, maybe 1 million, 6 million on the Burma side, but we work in this, right in the middle. There's a little black line, it's called Karen State, about 1.5 million people in that area. And like I said, in our area, we're the only ones providing surgery or high-level medical care. They have their own language and customs, and we've just fallen in love with that. They appreciate the simple things in life, and are just, I learn as much from them as I'm sure they do from me. The political environment is pretty rough. There's 135 different ethnic groups in Burma. Most of the, around the edges are the ethnic minorities, and then the white part in the middle is the majority Burman group. For the last 70 years, they've been fighting some kind of ongoing civil war, where the Burma army has intermittently having civil war with different groups, different ethnic minorities on the periphery. In 2015, though, they signed a ceasefire agreement, and businesses came in, internet came in, and development just kind of exploded. So I think that has made the difference between the previous dictator overthrows and then what happened in 2020. Turn down a little bit. Sorry. So she's just doing her... Can you turn down just a little bit? Yeah, that's fine. She's doing her normal, a little dance routine that she does every day. And in the background, she accidentally caught the coup going down, which is the black SUVs are going to parliament to arrest the parliament members. It's such an ironic video to start the whole conflict with. Fast forward a few years, this is a website that tracks conflict in the world, and they rank Burma as number two. They look at, you know, how many fatalities are happening, what percentage of the civilians are at risk, what portion of the country has experienced the violence, and how fragmented it is. But in America, we just never hear about it. It's not on the news. So, but they rank it as the number two most significant conflict in the world, and it's pretty brutal. Right now there's 3.5 million IDPs. That's refugees who have not crossed the border. So I understand Perth and Brisbane are about 3 million people. So you can imagine everybody in those cities had to leave, suddenly flee their homes, leave their homes abandoned. That's the kind of picture you're looking at. Half of those are kids. 20,000 detained political prisoners. Again, in the US, we just don't understand what that means. It means not that you've committed a crime, but that you've protested against the current government in some way or fashion. Could be as innocent as liking something against the current government on your Facebook post, or evolved in a protest. 100,000 homes burned, 15 million people at food at risk for starving. That's a lot, and we're really worried about that one. 1,500 attacks on healthcare workers and facilities, and we're not really sure why, but this is the one that's directly affecting us the most. And we have lost, we haven't lost any of our own team, but many of the people that we work with and a lot of our team's friends have died. Most of this threat comes from the airstrikes. So you can see in 2023, it just started becoming a lot more and more airstrikes. This is what, you can turn this one up a little bit. This is a BBC report on what an airstrike looks like and feels like.
Demanding democracy. When they think it's safe, they run. But the plane circles back.
It's no joke. The girl in the pink, I've been there and done that. Pretty rough political environment to operate in. Physical environments, not very easy either. It's a beautiful place. The natural beauty is stunning. But there's a few gaps, in the road. Where the roads don't go, there are trails. And this is a bridge that we built. Mona's crossing the bridge right there. we're using her for a test weight, you know, along with all the students that year, make sure our bridge didn't fall in. But notice the height above the river, because in rainy season, which goes from May to October, that this is the same picture, same bridge. Pretty intense rains, right? It also takes out, not just that, it takes out the roads. So this is one of our trucks during rainy season trying to bring in supplies. We'll load up the back with, in plastic totes, maybe 15 to 20 kilos a piece. We load them up onto the truck. So we try to move most of our supplies before the rains hit, obviously. This is, we're running a hospital, and we run out of supplies. We need emergencies. Something happens, an attack, where we use up our supplies, we'll need to restock. So this is a vital part of it. Food supplies. Also, if we need to get patients out during this time, like it's more than we can handle, we'll try to get a patient, we'll put them in a truck, or sometimes we can't, where the trucks can't go, we'll actually have to carry them out. People tell me you guys like to do this, Australians. So maybe we need more of you guys over there in the jungle. Go to the end of the road, pack your supplies on the motorcycles, and then head in. These are not the big dirt bikes that you see on TV. These are, you know, 125 Honda Dreams. and these guys can take them anywhere. They usually will put one bag in front of them that helps keep the weight down. They like the Dream because it's cut out under, like the scooter, or it could be because it's low and they can put a weight down low. But these guys are gonna take on whatever they come across, whether it's landslides or rivers. These guys are just like my heroes. They're just young guys, quiet, don't say much. They carry a machete and that's about it. and they hope their motorcycle starts. Also have to get all the supplies on a motorcycle over. And you do this all day long. They'll do this, and there's several big rivers like this they have to cross. Sometimes there's a bridge, but often not. And they'll spend all day at it. Anyways, these are just, it's a pleasure to know them. Lastly, the earthquake many of you heard about. This is our Chiang Mai office. It's about 500 kilometers from the center of the earthquake. And one of our staff got this picture. So you can see it's a pretty significant earthquake when it's shaking like that. That's a fountain outside our office. And we're getting many reports that quite a lot of damage done, especially central Burma. And this brings up some real ethical dilemmas. How do you provide relief in these settings to people who need it, but not support a brutal dictator that continues to bomb while he's asking for relief? It's kind of a switch and bait. That's our environment for our training program. So we have the physician associate program. This is 5 years. They will owe their leaders 5 years after they're done. But we're really careful who we take. So we put a lot of effort into interviewing them. We want to see that they have made commitment somehow to serving their people, because we want them after graduation to go back to their remote areas, their home areas, to provide medical care. This is a boot camp that goes on for 6 weeks, pretty intense physically, but we see who is good team support, team players. We don't want just prima donnas that want to just get out. Use this as an opportunity just to leave. So we push them hard. We want to see that they're committed. And they need to be physically fit. This is how we will, if the trucks can't go or the motorcycles can't go, we'll carry patients out. Sometimes that'll take them days to get them out. So this is a bamboo pole with a hammock strung up, and then the patient is in that. And I have some videos that you would not want to be a patient in that. Or you have to carry in supplies. This is, we've done that routinely. We've had students all have to carry in supplies. She's probably 40 kilos, and that pack is probably about 15 kilos. Our first year is when we start then just some of the basics, basic science, math, English, because there's more things written in English for medicine than in Karen, and certainly Karen and Burmese. But that'll give them the ability then to talk with consultants or to read a medical paper online. Also, how to study and critical thinking are other topics that we really focus on this first year. So we want them to be able to think critically, especially in areas where there's marginal resources. Then we get into the clinical training. This is years 2 through 5. And we really emphasize hands-on training. We'll do the lecture, and then we'll have something for them to practice on physically with their hands. Graduation. For some of them, then we'll take on further and do the surgical training programs. This is our operating room. Just to say, we really have tried hard to provide quality environment for modern medicine. This is not, this is our frontline tent. We have the engineering tech program. As difficult as the environment is, engineering tech helps provide the gap between, modify the environment to be able to provide medical care. And so you need power, for example, to run an OR. You need power for the lights, you need power for the oxygen concentrator, for the monitors. And we do that primarily through solar. But technology, really, modern technology, really favors us being able to do this kind of thing, because, for example, these are lithium-ion batteries, but they're all connected to the internet. So we can have an app and look on the internet to see which battery's out, which ones are down, and make adjustments accordingly. But all this equipment, it takes maintenance, it takes power. So we have it. That's what the engineers do. Engineering tech. Communication is also very high tech. You don't just hook into your phone lines. These are satellites. This is the old one, old school on the right. And as you can expect, it's got a patient in the back. You can hear him. It's not fun. But you can expect with that kind of roads, you're going to have a few problems with your vehicles. So teaching them how to fix those vehicles. So any mechanics here, someday you guys want a mission field, come out for a couple weeks and help our guys, teach them how to fix things. They spend a lot of time on the ground. One of the Karen guys, they call Uncle Buffalo, because he looks like he's always in the mud, like the buffalo, the water buffalo, always under the fixing these trucks. How to build in that context. So we're making all of our own stuff. We're making our own bricks. If we use wood, we cut the tree and cut it up with a chainsaw. We make concrete. We have a machine that crushes and makes gravel, crushes rocks to make gravel. We have students carry sand if they've been bad. Then teach people how to weld. We formed in November 2023, we formed a frontline surgical group. This is where we move closer to where the fighting is. What we found is that people were taking 3 or 4 days to get to us from these areas. Even though these are very developed areas and there's hospitals down there, they're controlled by the Burma Army, and people are too afraid to use those local hospitals, and they're coming instead 3 or 4 days to come to us. So we thought we could do better by moving forward. So we did that. And there's a ton of stories I can tell about that. This lady here, that's her hospital room. She's not dead, she's alive. There's IV going into her, but on the front line, you're especially worried about the airstrikes. So this is just to protect her. Our guys are getting tired. It's been on, going on 4 years now, and they're really starting to get tired. Not physically so much. They're young and healthy guys, but just amputating, you know, dozens and dozens of healthy young men's legs or arms, seeing people broken and crushed, children, all kinds of people from this, and they're just getting tired. But I wanted to concentrate on one story, and then I'll finish. This is a little girl that came from a remote village in the jungle. Village had no strategic value from a military standpoint. They, not close to the fighting. No soldiers were near their village. They were subsistence farmers. So, you know, that's, life is hard enough just farming for your food. It was on a Tuesday evening, about 5 o'clock. They're sitting down to meals. Just a common Tuesday. And suddenly their house just blew up. And at about the same time, they heard the jet overhead. And it just kind of all happened at once. They were confused. They didn't know what happened. They grabbed, you know, the kids and basically run out of the house. The house now is on fire. The whole village is on fire. One of the guys I talked to had the sense that he could see that the jet was turning around and coming back for another run. So they also realized that their little girl, their little 5-year-old girl, was injured quite severely. So the uncle cradles her up in his arms and gets on the back of one of those motorcycles, and they take her toward the river. They link up with one of our guys in a truck. Took them an hour and a half to get to the river, and then it took, once they met one of our PAs, graduates, who was on the front line, took them about 4 hours in a truck to get back to our hospital. So that's in the back of the trucks, right? They bundle her up with blankets, it's cold. When I drive in these trucks, they usually put me in the front, you know, the old guy up in the front where it's nice and cushy, and it's still rough. Your head's bouncing off the window or the dashboard. In the back, 10 times worse. And if you can imagine, probably most of you can't, but your intestines are out, really painful. Every jarring bounce would have been extremely excruciating. They arrived about 1 a.m. By that time, she's past crying. She's not crying, she's just quiet. She's awake, she's alert, she's looking at us, but she's just not crying anymore. So we get her ready for surgery. Our doctors get up, so they were at 1 o'clock, everybody's in bed. I saw my good dear brother, Dr. Augustine's general surgeon, and he's normally kind to everybody he meets, talks a lot, jokes a lot. He's just quiet, I can tell. You just feel him shoulder that weight for this little life. And same with his wife, she's the anesthesia, and she's normally laughing all the time. I can hear her across the campus laughing. And again, she's not laughing now. She's calculating to get the doses right. This is a weight for a little life in their hands. We get blood from what we call a walking blood bank. So it's still fresh. All the clotting factors work. Platelet counts are high. And we know everybody's blood type. So if we know that our patient is type B and we know you have type B, then we come get you and we take a unit of blood from you and then transfuse the patient with it. We know she was type B because she gave it just 2 months before. So all of us there just give regularly. The little girl had other injuries as well. And then we took her to the OR. As we're just cutting her clothes off, I mean, her clothes are rags. Anyways, but they're further shredded by the shrapnel. There's blood on them. And cutting them off, it was little bits of straw on her skin and a little dirt from the back of the truck when it just kind of hit me. This is where whatever you do to the least of these, you do to me. And I realized this is the skinny scared little child me that I was treating, hands on. Okay, I looked at the monitor, her heart rate's 130. And you know, just really kind of coming to grips with that, my whole team is putting their life on the line. Our team has been targeted twice for bombing. They missed both times, and one because we had moved out from that place, and one because we were never there, but it was close. They're putting their lives on the line for this little kid. Carol, my wife, this morning read to me from John 15, where he says, no greater love has this than somebody lay down his life for their friends. And you know, my team is putting their life on this line. And a little 5-year-old girl is pretty easy to love, right? She's scared, it's cold, she's skinny, she just wants help. Pretty easy to love, but something happens in that setting. I don't know Greek, so I could be wrong here, any of you that do, but I asked ChatGPT to translate that, the original, and according to them, where it says, whatever you do to the least of these, you do it to me. Not as unto me, but not for me, but to me, actually to Jesus. And I think my whole team, as that dynamic is happening, I really love this kid. You know, I'm going to do anything I can. This is in the middle of the night. We are going to spend the rest of the night trying to save this kid, no matter what happens, no matter if the planes come in, no matter what. And then a very interesting thing happens. A lot of times, doctors, they'll do whatever you need to do, what's in front of you at the time. You go think about it later. So later, I'm thinking about this later. You know, this is Jesus. But then I start realizing, actually, we are the broken ones. You know, we are the ones that are sick, in prison. We're the ones that need help, too. And Jesus did that. As we enter Passion Week, the thing I'd leave you with is that Jesus loves us deeply. And I think I would look at this passage. I had one guy came up to me afterwards, and he goes, you know, yeah, that's the scariest scripture in all of the Bible. You know, and on the surface, it seems like it. It seems like whatever we didn't do to the least of these, we didn't do to Jesus, and we're condemned for eternity. But I encourage you to look at this another way, too. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to put your hands on Jesus, to treat him. You know, we're all broken, but this is our chance. And out of that, I think we start to realize how much Jesus actually loves us. So it's an opportunity through serving those who need help that are around you. It doesn't have to be in the jungle. It can be out here, whatever Sydney's version of this is. I'm sure it's here. I've worked in the emergency room in America, and I know that every city has it, that there are people in need, in really deep needs. Look at this opportunity to find Jesus and see if that doesn't happen. You start working in that, see if you don't start realizing, actually, Jesus loves us. We're the broken ones. And that's a really powerful dynamic. You start going down that route, and there's nothing that you really can't do. I was talking to one of the paramedics last night there, and you know, just realized, you know, if you are operating on that principle, I'm treating Jesus, you can run into burning buildings or into car wrecks. You can take care of them. You know, what you're willing to give. In this case, you know, I know what I'm willing to give to these people. And this is her a couple weeks later. We got done with surgery early that morning. Actually, just as we were finishing up, it was about 4 or 5 a.m., the truck comes in again. You know, it's still dark. I can see 2 IV poles in the back of the truck. You know, it's more people from the same village. This is a quote from Brennan Manning that I really, really like. And I think as we go into Passion Week, I challenge you that this is, this year, think about this. Jesus loves you. It's the one thing you need to know. And I think one of the ways we can understand that on a very visceral level is to help care for him in his various forms, his various disguises. This is the last video.